Hello and welcome to this new episode in our Fast Movers series on the Ship Energy podcast. I'm Ariane Morrissey, and in this series, I invite you to meet leaders from maritime companies that were among the first to take the plunge on decarbonization. Here, we go beyond initial big announcements and headlines. Instead, our goal is to understand what happens next once new fuels or technologies are installed and become part of those companies' operations. This week, I'm joined by Paul Hexter, president of Waterfront Shipping, a joint venture between Methanex and MOL, which was among the first to use methanol as a marine fuel. The company started operating methanol dual-fuel vessels in 2016, and today 19 of the 30 deep-sea tankers in its fleet are equipped with dual-fuel technology. We're here to discuss the results, lessons learned, and how they see the next steps. So welcome to the podcast, Paul.
Good morning. Thank you, Ariane, for having me.
So your experience with methanol started nearly 10 years ago. If I ask you to look back on the last decade, what would you say was the number one challenge and what was the biggest lesson?
So first of all, I have to give credit to my predecessor, Jonah Hognestad. He was heavily involved in the development of the technology. Him and some close owners approached MAN in 2013 to see if methanol would be a viable marine fuel. And MAN, as any engine manufacturer would, they said they could burn anything in the main engine. I would say the biggest challenge, which was known, was the short duration from concept to delivery of the first ships. So those initial discussions took place in 2013, and we took delivery of the first seven ships in 2016. So there was certainly early teething, which, yeah, as I said, isn't unexpected with the short duration from concept design to delivery.
And in terms of the biggest lesson from the past 10 years, what was the main learning?
The importance of good partners. So we did a really good job selecting the partners that we have in those ships. The early teething with the technology would have been a big challenge if we didn't have good partners who were invested in the success of the project. So I recently visited, it was last year, I visited one of our time charter ships that was first generation. And in the engine room with the chief engineer, these ships had challenges with figuring out what the appropriate pilot fuel, lubricating oil, there was piping changes that happened from first generation to second generation. And there was a lot of work put on the officers and crew during that period. And what was impressive for me was the sense of pride that the people in the engine room had for the R&D and the work and the ingenuity that they put into making those first generations the success they were. And then each successive generation, we're on our third generation of methanol dual fuel ships now, and each one has been progressively better thanks to the support we've had from the people on board and the owners and MAN. So yeah, partners is the key.
And now in terms of results, what have been the results so far in terms of emissions reductions and the proportion of the time that your dual fuel ships are actually operated on methanol today?
Yeah, so given the timing when we started to look at these ships, the intention was to meet IMO 2020 and the sulfur cap. So in the emissions on SOx, NOx, and particulate matter is really significant. I think the benefit of these methanol dual fuel engines is methanol is methanol. So whether it's conventional methanol, green or blue methanol, these ships can run on that without any changes. To date, we've run the ships over 245,000 hours on methanol during the teething phase and to the current generation. Yeah, so really the technology works, but it's like any technology. There's always teething and there's challenges and regular maintenance and things that takes place over the years. But yeah, the technology works, and running over 250,000 or 245,000 hours, proves that the technology works.
Now you said that the technology works, but what proportion of the total time does those hours represent? And in commercial terms, how do you decide what proportion of the time those ships are operated on methanol versus conventional fuels?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, they're dual fuel. Our operations team is looking at the cost of methanol versus conventional fuel all the time. And depending on the trading pattern, there's periods where methanol is really competitively priced, especially compared to MGO. And other times it's competitive even against VLSFO on an energy equivalent basis. Our ships are running quite often now on methanol in the current price environment.
And are you satisfied with those results and the proportion of the time that your ships are using methanol? Or, you know, you mentioned that this is your third generation of methanol dual fuel vessels. Are you working on generation four already? Are you working to improve either the technology or the use of it?
We don't have a order book at the moment, so we don't have ships on order. But we do have a working group. So we have a number of different time charter owners that have the methanol dual fuel technology. And recently we had a methanol group meeting in Vancouver. And one of the topics of discussion is that methanol dual fuel working group. So spare parts can be a challenge, and some owners are more proactive in procuring their spares. We realized that having all of the 19 ships and the owners that they represent have a single voice when they approach the engine manufacturer, it's been more effective in terms of pushing for improvements or procuring spare parts.
Now, you mentioned the technical teething problems. Obviously, first movers are bound to face technical challenges, regulatory challenges also. So I'd like to dive a little bit into those practical challenges of using a completely new marine fuel. Because we know, for example, that Maersk has made headlines in recent months when they reported problems with their methanol dual fuel engines. In their words, those engines required too much maintenance. So I wanted to check, was that also your experience?
Yeah, I'm not familiar specifically what the Maersk challenges are, but definitely in the early teething days, as I mentioned, there was a lot of work being done by the people on board and the owners to get the lubricating oil balances correct and balancing reducing the amount of pilot fuel required. There were some challenges with the fuel booster injector valve specifically. So it's quite technical, but there's the system is a secondary fuel delivery system, and there's no pressure in the secondary fuel delivery system except on injection. And that atomizer at the fuel booster injector valve is the spare part that we end up changing out the most. But like I said, for the proactive owners that have a supply on board, it's a relatively small job. And I would say because it's a secondary fuel delivery system, the main engine is a typical well-tested MAN two-stroke engine. So with it being a fail-to-safe, as soon as there's challenges with the secondary fuel delivery system, the switch over to conventional fuel is immediate. So there's no downtime on the ships, typically. Yeah, so we're able to transfer from one fuel to the other when those spare parts need to be replaced.
Moving on to the bigger picture, if I may, we've seen that the latest figures from DNV suggest that since the second half of 2024, LNG has overtaken methanol in the alternative fuel order book. So are you concerned that methanol is falling out of favor as a marine fuel? And if that was the case, what would be the implications for your company?
Yeah, I don't know that it's a methanol falling out of favor. I think we've said from the beginning when we took these ships that methanol isn't going to replace all conventional fuel, and there's room for many alternative fuels. I think some of the big owners that you're thinking about, they're covering their bases. They have multiple ships, conventional fuel, methanol fuel, LNG fuel. So I think really there's an opportunity for all the alternative fuels in the path forward, and methanol is one of them that makes a lot of sense. It's liquid at ambient temperature. It can be stored in basically existing infrastructure for bunkering. The bunkering itself doesn't require cryogenic treatment or pressurization. There are some advantages given the nature of methanol. But yeah, there's definitely room for multiple alternative fuels in the market.
And then for any alternative fuel, a key question is always that of being able to secure fuel supplies. I know you're in the somewhat unique position as a subsidiary of Methanex, but what is the current picture in terms of methanol availability in different ports, and how much has this changed in the past 10 years?
Yeah, I think methanol is the largest or most transported commodity chemical in the world. It exists, or there's storage in over 125 ports globally. You're right, we're uniquely positioned because on the medium range tankers that have the dual fuel technology, we're loading methanol basically every other voyage. So we've loaded methanol as a bunker in Chile, in Trinidad, in Louisiana, in New Zealand. We've done bunkering demonstrations to prove that it's basically the same process as conventional bunkering, with provided you, the safety precautions are in place. We've done a bunkering demo in Rotterdam, which was a barge to ship. We did a bunkering demo in Gothenburg, which was a small tanker to the Stena Germanica ferry. And then we also did a bunkering demo in the Caribbean, in Trinidad. So once the infrastructure for that last mile is established, it's very little modifications to bunkering infrastructure need to take place. Methanex is advancing that last mile. In the last year, they signed two strategic bunkering partnerships, one in the ARA and one in South Korea, to help that last mile in two of the busiest global trade corridors. So it's expanding for sure. Yeah. But as you said, for us, we're uniquely positioned.
And then in terms of the direction of the market, so for fuels like methanol, do you anticipate that procurement will move fully to kind of long-term offtake agreements, or do you see a potential with those pilots that you described for a spot market to develop eventually?
I think it's evolving. Yeah, I think from a producer perspective, they would prefer long-term offtake arrangements, but yeah, I'm sure it will adapt and change as the infrastructure grows.
Obviously, we can't ignore the latest IMO developments with the net zero framework being postponed for a year. Do you think that being a first mover was wise commercially, even if the global GHG pricing mechanism is now delayed and there is uncertainty about whether it's going to be adopted at all?
Yeah, I think this goes back to 2013 when the concept was initially raised. And my president at the time went to the CEO and said, we're thinking about doing this. And the feedback was, are we leaders or are we not leaders? So the decision was taken to advance methanol as a dual fuel technology. And it's worked for us. I think we've proven that the technology works. Yeah, and we're happy with the decision.
And I'm just curious, because initially you mentioned that there's been, you know, three different generations of those vessels. So is there a price to pay also for first movers to, you know, go through these iterations and trial and errors and to get those learnings that will eventually benefit everybody, as opposed to just, you know, sitting back and waiting and letting other companies take that risk?
I'm sure there is, but it was something that we went into knowing. And for us, especially around the IMO 2020, we knew it was something that would completely be a game changer when it came to our emissions of SOx, NOx, and particulate matter. The further development of the technology is something we're proud of, because now there's a pathway to net zero. And we did a demonstration voyage in 2023 to prove that methanol is a pathway to net zero on a life cycle basis. We did a voyage from our Methanex production site in Geismar, Louisiana to Antwerp, and we loaded a mix of conventional methanol and biomethanol, and we're able to prove a net zero voyage on an 18-day trip to Antwerp. So I think, yeah, proving that the pathway to net zero exists in methanol is something that we're proud of.
Interesting that you mentioned that, because obviously under the IMO net zero framework, if and when it is adopted, the GHG intensity is going to be measured on a life cycle basis. So what is your approach to transitioning to biomethanol and eventually e-methanol?
Yeah, so for us, we actually earlier this year procured some biomethanol to help us achieve our FuelEU Maritime compliance obligations. So we're using a small amount of green methanol today, even to help us meet our positive compliance balance for FuelEU Maritime. So the pathway is there for sure.
And now you talked at the beginning about the role of your people on board, role of crews in overcoming these teething problems. So I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts also about the training challenge for companies that are using new fuels and technologies. So how was that transition for your teams from handling methanol as a cargo to using it as a fuel?
So MAN at the time offered, and I believe Everlance still does, offer specific dual fuel training. There's IGF code mandatory training requirements. Some industry partnerships have come up over the last couple of years that are also providing additional officer and crew training, like Green Marine, for instance. But for us, we have quite a robust marine assurance and responsible care department and commitment. And we carry out onboard methanol safe handling and nitrogen awareness training. It's mandatory for all the crew that are on our ships. So the methanol dual fuel system is fail to safe, which means if there's any issue with the system at that time, the system is purged with nitrogen to make sure that there's no methanol exposure to the people on board. So the combination of the methanol safe handling and awareness and the nitrogen awareness training has been something that we've had in our program for a number of years.
How did your crews react when you first told them about the project to be using methanol as fuel going forward? Were they excited to be part of it, or were there concerns in the room?
Yeah, so our ships are largely time chartered in, so the owners are responsible for the crewing of those ships. I could say the owners themselves and the technical managers were interested. I would say the most direct feedback I had from people on board was on the Leikanger that visited Vancouver last year, and the sense of pride that the chief engineer had in being part of the first movers. So I'm sure it wasn't without work, but there's definitely a sense of pride in what was accomplished over the years.
How are you envisioning the next steps? Are you planning to expand your methanol capable fleet, or are you considering other fuels or other technologies also?
These ships are dual fuel. I think our plan for future new building tenders would be still with the technology, with methanol as a dual fuel. As I said, we don't have an order book at the moment.
And do you have a rough timeline for when that could happen?
That's the magic question. Right now, with the yard availability and new building prices, it's something that we're looking at all the time.
And to finish, what would you tell other ship owners who perhaps today might be hesitant to take the plunge and invest in new fuels, new technologies, or, you know, be a first mover or fast follower?
Yeah, I think your comment about the delay to the net zero framework, it's real. Probably at the moment, there are owners who are deferring decisions to take that step, or for new buildings or retrofit. I think it makes sense. Like, we want to monitor closely the developments in regulation. We know that there's work still ongoing, like with the FuelEU Maritime review that's upcoming. The IMO is planning consultations with member states to decide the next step. I think the industry as a whole is supportive of the move towards more sustainable or sustainability and clean burning fuels. So maybe the temporization or the delay in the framework will give the owners a chance to evaluate what they see as the appropriate next steps for them. But the methanol dual fuel technology has worked for us, and yeah, we're interested and excited about our next new building program when that happens.
Do you think there is such a thing as a first mover advantage? Obviously, you've been pioneering, or one of the pioneers of methanol dual fuel technology 10 years ago. So in commercial terms, has that paid off? Does that bring you an advantage commercially?
Commercially, I would say that the advantage would be some charterers or owners want to work with somebody who's advancing the technology. There isn't a premium that's we're seeing on as a result of being a first mover from a freight perspective, but definitely from a reputational or I think there are charterers that like the story and like the fact that we're a first mover and that we're taking a leadership position in doing these demonstrations to prove that there's a path to net zero.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity to have the conversation. As we've proven, methanol, the dual fuel technology works. I'm proud that we've had over 245,000 hours running on the technology and been able to do the demonstrations both on the bunkering and the net zero voyage to prove that there's a pathway to net zero with methanol.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you.